This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Welcome back to Wells Tech. This is episode 357 for Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014, a show where we talk about technology and ministry with our closest friends. In fact, I got a little bottle here, Sally, from Coke Zero that says, share a Coke Zero with friends.
I've got
something better, or we've got something better to share than Coke Zero. We have a Wells Tech podcast and all the good stuff that goes along with that. How are you, Sally?
I am awesome, Martin. Happy to be joining you in September. We've made it past Labor Day.
What did you do over Labor Day? Anything special?
We did. We went to a Renaissance Festival here in Minnesota. That's apparently a really big thing because we were there with a lot of other people at a huge festival. I had no idea it was that big. Yeah. Saw some jousting, saw some fire juggling and axe throwing and a lot of other things that my eyes had just never seen before.
Apparently it was sunny there too.
Yeah, it was a sunny day there. I'm sporting a little bit of red, so don't adjust your monitors, folks.
That's right.
Just the way it is.
The red balance is probably accurate.
Yeah, unfortunately. Not painful, though.
That's fun. That was in Rome? Where was that?
It was in the cities, yeah.
Oh, we went out. Okay.
Yeah. It was big, really huge, so quite a day. Did you have a nice Labor Day as well?
We did. Saw the grandchild.
Can't beat that.
Was neat. It was neat. Yep. He's not saying grandpa yet. Only 5 months. So.
Maybe some smiles for you, though?
Yeah, absolutely. So awesome. That made my weekend.
Sure.
Anyway, we're back at it, and we're actually going to put a bow on this thing we call the Wells Tech Wiki Migration Project. All summer, we've been shortening the shows just a little bit and then focusing on just really one major task, and that's moving everything that we had on the Wells Tech Wiki over to the new Wiki platform, which is Google, a Google Sites app. So that's wellstechwiki.gapps for Google Apps.wells.net if you're interested in seeing what's on the site. And it's pretty easy to navigate, and we're going to be on that last topic called school. But if you have any other contributions that you'd like to add, just like any other wiki, it's very easy to do. There's a little button at the top that says request an account. And you'll get an account, and then you can go in and add your own stuff, edit some stuff if you prefer, and actually contribute in any way you like and make this a better place than it is today.
Yep, and I bet today's topic is one that we'll get lots of edits on, Martin, because I know that we have a large group of listeners who are in
educators.
The teacher space. That's right. Lots of educators in our listening audience, and that's what our whole focus is for today's show. It's the last section of the wiki. It's titled School. It's divided into two areas, classroom technology and learning management software. So maybe we should just dive right into that classroom technology section.
Fun. Yeah, I like this first one, and that's apps for class. We have some things that we've done in the past, but this is kind of the fun stuff where you can share some of the things that work best, whether they be web apps or Chrome apps or iPad apps that make sense for you to use in your classroom, either for you as a teacher or educator or for your students or both. So we've got a lot of examples here.
Yeah, lots of lists out there on the web. Seems to be a popular topic for people to blog about or whatever. And even an app song from Sesame Street. So if you're looking for something fun, maybe you want to check out there's an app for that song. One of the ones I wanted to draw attention to, Martin, was Kathy Schrock's Bloomin' Apps. And it's a page where this educator, Kathy Schrock, has a lot of great compilation-type content out on her site. And on this page, she has a lot of infographics that have to do with Bloom's taxonomy. And as you scroll down the page, you'll get to some that are Bloom's taxonomy-centric, but they show apps So here's one that I'm showing on the screen right now for those watching the video. It's titled iPad Apps to Support Bloom's Revised Taxonomy. So it shows iPad apps that are good for remembering things, for understanding things, for applying, analyzing, evaluating, and creating things as you work your way up the scale of Bloom's Taxonomy of Learning. And those are all iPad apps, but there's additional recommendations, infographics for Android apps, for Google apps. There's a Google app for practically all of those levels of Bloom's Taxonomy. And then Web 2.0 apps or internet-based apps that you can use from any browser to support Bloom's Taxonomy's types of learning. So I thought these were really great recommendations, especially if you're trying to move your students up that scale and, you know, get some of that higher levels of learning going on in your classroom.
Excellent beginning of the school year kind of content as you're thinking through lesson planning for the year and trying to apply these taxonomy principles. These are real easy ways to just focus in on those apps that make sense. They've been kind of reviewed and vetted, and she's done a nice job with this.
Yep. Also in that classroom technology section, we have pages that are more centric to particular hardware solutions, not the computers necessarily, but the whiteboards and the video projectors that you might be using in your classroom. And there's a variety of them represented here on our whiteboard page, including some links to different Shopwell's vendors and things like that. So if you are in the market for whiteboards or you have experience with particular brand of whiteboards, perhaps you want to go out here and update our interactive whiteboard page. And as I mentioned, we also have a video projector page where we have a little bit of information and some links to Shopwell's video vendors as well.
Yep. And the final category under classroom technology was one that was just dedicated to virtual tours and virtual mapping, like Google Earth. There's a lot of interest, certainly by history or geography teachers, but we even had a whole show a number of years back on Google Earth and its application, but it's certainly evolved. There's some lit trip guidelines, just some good resources there, and probably many more that we don't have that would be useful if you are a Google Maps or Google Earth user or any other virtual technologies, mapping or tour technologies that are out there on the internet. This would be a place to put links to those and maybe a little bit of description of how you've used those so that other people could learn and use those as well.
Excellent. Very good. I wish I was in class now and taking virtual trips around the world.
Yeah, every generation maybe says that as they look back on, you know, what's available now, but I think just in the past 10 years, students maybe that are late in college or just college grads can look back at their grade school years and wish, boy, I wish we had that kind of stuff when I was there. So
exactly. Yep. On their slick little Chromebooks or tablets to have it at their fingertips.
One of those categories that they're probably looking at that they wish they had had when they were going through school is the next category, which is learning management software, the ability to kind of bring this all together, this whole educational experiences there in whatever grade, where the teacher and the student can be on the same page with online software.
Right, and there's really pretty much four big players, and we have an other category as well. We've listed Edmodo, Google Classroom, Moodle, and Schoology. And I actually have a brief look for our listeners today at each of those, as I was able to create an account on Edmodo and an account on Schoology. And I think if you're looking at these, you're going to feel like that's very Facebook, very similar to Facebook. The look and feel of both tools is similar to Facebook and the interactivity with both. You can see the most recent things in your feed, and you can send messages to specific groups of people and things like that. On both of them, you set up courses or classes, and the students are a part of your different classes that you set up. So they can have multiple teachers with multiple classes access and stuff. Very similar to their classroom schedule as they move class to class. And on both, you can add things, quizzes and assignments and things like that, so that when they log into their Schoology or Edmodo experience, they're seeing that. So we have some useful links on the wiki to help resources for both of those.
One thing I've noticed, Sally, about those tools, and kind of as a segue maybe to the next tool, Google Classrooms, is they do integrate with third-party products like Google Apps, or many of them do, or Dropbox, things that you can post online resources to or links to. So they're kind of in that suite of online educational tools where they cross between kind of a learning management system to kind of assignment submission and, you know, document storage, which is where Google started. They kind of started on the document storage
side. Right, the drive side.
Built out from there versus, you know, the other way around. And that's kind of made them a little bit unique just in the little review I've done of Google Classrooms. And it's a very new product, but they've kind of taken what they already did well, which is kind of the Google Docs side of things, and layered on top of it some classroom stuff. And as a result, I think it's a little bit simpler. Maybe you agree, maybe you don't. Maybe a little more intuitive when somebody comes in there, especially if they're already used to Google Apps.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's easy to add things. It connects very simply to the drive. I have an example one up on the screen right now that we created, and it's just a little bit simpler interface. And I think simple is good. I think sometimes students and teachers get overwhelmed by too much. And I'd say that's probably the fourth learning management system's downfall. When we talk about Moodle, it's kind of the big bazooka. It does it all, and it can be overwhelming to people, to students and teachers. They don't know how to use it effectively because there's just too much. So when you contrast a Moodle install versus a Google Classroom that's very simple and straightforward, I think you're going to find more people comfortable with the simple, scaled back version. So good place to start. Maybe as you progress into higher ed and things like that, you're going to need the more sophisticated type of system like Moodle. And I know on the Moodle page I listed several of our Wells organizations, MLC, the seminary, and the area Lutheran high schools online are using Moodle and using it effectively to deliver online training. So certainly one of the players in the ballgame, the one caveat I would note, is it's not just a web-based create an account and go with. It's something you have to download and install and continue to update. It takes some attention to have a Moodle site.
Yep. Then there's one other category here called Other. There are others. There's a lot of other kinds of tools. And this section here is the learning management stuff. Remember, we talked about the student information systems in another area on the wiki. But there are many other tools, and I'm sure there will be more as people explore this space and build tools that meet their needs.
Yep. In that other category, we just have listed currently Jupyter Ed, which started primarily as an online gradebook. So it wasn't really all the data management that you need for a student management system, and it wasn't the full-blown LMS, learning management system, where you can do quizzes online and things like that. It was just an electronic place to store your grades and for parents to access and keep up with their students' grades. But I think it's grown beyond that, and there's probably other players in this arena as well.
Right. So if you have contributions there, I think a lot of schools are using different things. I hear a lot of Schoology and Edmodo, probably some just playing with Google Classrooms, but that's certainly not exclusive. But even if you have any of those, it would be great for you to get in here, add your reactions, and maybe workarounds that you've needed to put in place to work the way you work. I think all of those kinds of additions to the wiki would be helpful for other people to see, as maybe they're considering it or maybe they're struggling with the same thing. So it would be an encouragement for you to get an account and participate in the wiki here.
Well, Martin, I think Oh, yeah, pat on the back. And one for me, too, because I'm really happy that we made it through the Wells Tech Wiki migration. That was kind of a daunting task at the beginning of summer, and we just kind of systematically worked through, hopefully to the benefit of our listeners, as we provide a platform where everyone can contribute and we can continue to manage this information and keep it as up-to-date as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks a lot nicer. I think it's going to be a lot better tool for us moving forward, and hopefully it becomes a better and better resource. So let's put a bow on that, Sally, and
done deal.
On to other things.
All right.
Some of those other things include our tips and picks of the week. And my tip of the week, let me just do a quick screen share here, if I can find the right screen to share. Right there, and that is where'd you go? There we go. My tip is the ability to use office tools, and when I say office tools, I mean Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, those kinds of tools, even without having that installed on your computer. And Microsoft, over the past, I don't know, 5-6 months, has really made a concerted effort to extend these tools to other platforms, including iPads and Android tablets. Even Chrome apps have been built, and that's really my tip, is if you want to just use Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and your needs aren't super sophisticated, and you know where you need to develop very complicated table of contents or endnotes, footnotes, that kind of thing. If you just need basic word processing, some of the same stuff that you're going to get in Google Docs or Google Sheets, whatever, these tools, this suite of online tools, is maybe something that's going to meet your needs. So Word Online, Excel Online, PowerPoint Online are all available. Put a link in the show notes where you can install a Chrome app, for instance, and then when you're ready to launch the app, just go to your apps and you've got Word Online right there for you. Just click on it. You can create a new blank document. You can browse existing templates or open up any recent documents on your OneDrive. So you get a OneDrive account. Works seamlessly with that. It's just all free. And then once you're in the tool, it'll look real familiar. It'll look essentially like Word, with the tab at the top, the ribbon at the top, and you just start typing and saving, and it's all online, and you have not had to install anything on your local computer. It's all backed up on the cloud, and very nice progress they've made in some of these web apps that give you a great experience and allow you to work online with the familiar interface and a tool that other people can also collaborate on with you, or even download to a local file if they have Word installed locally. So lots of flexibility. So if you're looking for a nice solid office suite, that's my tip. You really don't have to pay the money to have that local install. Just use the ones online.
Very cool. I feel like a traitor almost to be looking at Word stuff instead of Google Drive online. So
you have choices, right?
You have choices. That's nice. And I could see using that in a school setting where maybe the students need access to a word processor and the staff has already adopted Microsoft products or whatever. So you're using the same things with your students, but just this online version or whatever. Right. So very good.
What's your tip, Sally?
My tip is a PicMonkey tip. Let's see if I can share my screen. I learned something new about PicMonkey, and I always like it when that happens. PicMonkey is my favorite online image editor. And you can do all kinds of fun things with it, and it's very easy to use and straightforward. But one thing that you need to do when you're done, since you're typically working in the cloud with PicMonkey, is you need to press the Save button to save it down to your computer. And that's where my tips come in. There's multiple ways to save, and I didn't realize that. I usually have to go to this Save to My Computer button and scroll to the place I want to save it and give it a name and things like that. But instead, I can, in this Save window, just grab it and drag it to my desktop and let go, and it will save on my desktop. Alternatively, instead of clicking this green button, another thing I can do is just click once on the image, and it saves to my downloads directory. So a left click on the image will save it without going through all the steps. It'll go to my downloads. And then finally, you can also right click and do save image as. You can't do that over here in the editor. If you right click, you don't get those options. But if you're in the save window, you can do one of these three things. Grab it and drag it to your desktop. Oh, or you can click it once to download it, or you can right-click it to save it. So more ways to save your PicMonkey creations. That's my tip.
Yep. Very nice tool. I think they have put together a very user-friendly experience already, and this is just an example of how you can easily get that stuff down to your computer. Nice tip.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on to picks of the week.
My pick of the week is actually courtesy of the Wells Tech Listserv. So thank you very much to Pastor Kevin Schultz from St. Matthew in Spokane, Washington, who logged on today and sent a message asking for recommendations for bulk text messaging. So he'd like to be able to send a text message to everyone, say, in his congregation who signs up for that kind of service. And there were a couple of genres of responses. There were some people that responded that you can use Twitter to do that, because with a Twitter account, people can subscribe via SMS or text messaging, and they will get all your tweets via text message.
If they've turned on, yeah, because by default, I don't think you get notified of all tweets. You have to pick which one, so there's some manual effort there.
Right, and I do have a help page that I'll include in the show notes about how to do that on your Twitter account, because there is some help out there for that. But the thing that I learned, thanks to the listserv in this question, was there's a new service in the block, and it's called Remind, and you can get to it at remind.com. And I went over to Remind, and I signed up, and I created an account for our local resale shop that supports the Area Lutheran High School here in town. It's called Treasure House. Maybe you know New Ulmites or are familiar with that, or those that have been in New Ulm in the past. But Treasure House would like to be able to allow their customers to get text messages, you know, when we have sales and things like that. And so I created a Treasure House account, and it immediately gave me a phone number and a code to type in. So I went over on my cell phone and typed in the phone number and sent that message, and it worked. I was able to get text messages. So as the owner of the account, I have this interface here where I can type out, you know, whatever the message is. Today's sale, you know, 50% off store-wide. Whatever the sale is that I want to advertise, and press send. I still have 106 characters, so it must be about 120 or so that you can send. I have to sign in again. Apparently my sign-in timed out. But just immediately it sent the text message to my cell phone. So it worked very well. In addition to sending them immediately, you can schedule them as well. And so there's a schedule for later button down here where you can say, I want to send this out tomorrow morning at, you know, 9:30 a.m. or whatever it is, so that I can hit all those shoppers just in time for their heading out to search for our sales and things like that. So pretty straightforward. You can also include attachments. It'll text message that there's an attachment and include a link, and you click that link to see the attachment on the web through the browser. But other than that, I found Remind to be super easy to set up. There is a little bit of a caveat in that it's very classroom-centric. So Remind's...
I see add parents and students there.
Right. Remind is set up for teachers to be able to text with their parents and their students. And so if you can get past that language... It is fine for anyone to use. As a matter of fact, I think it was James Monkey who shared this on the listserv. He even included a link to an FAQ page, and it's just very straightforward. It says, can I use this for other things? I'm not a teacher. Can I use Remind? And it says, absolutely. Our company is highly focused on K-12 educators, so our language will be for teachers, students, and parents. But whether you run a little league team, a community volunteer program, or a religious organization, you are welcome to use Remind. So,
interesting. So do users have to subscribe their phone number, or you can add them, or how does that work?
I think you can do it either way, but when I signed up, and I can't bring it up real quickly here, but when I signed up, it gave me a QR code as well as a phone number and an account number, basically. And so in my text messaging, I used that phone number to send a text with the account name, and I was subscribed. It asked me to... It said reply with your full name, basically, and that's what ultimately made me be subscribed. And I think when I was showing it, you could tell I was subscribed because it showed my name over in the sidebar. And
so that phone number that was on the screen was not yours. That's one they gave you.
That's correct.
So when you send out a text message, it'll come from that phone number, not one phone number that you own.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Cool. And there's no cost?
There is no cost, so... I'm not complaining. It's just a little bit odd that it says students and teachers. And when I got the text message, like I said, there were kind of two options. I'm just going backwards to the screen. And I'm still not finding it. I think the messages come in from multiple phone numbers. It's not a set phone number that you get the messages from.
Okay. So they have to be aware that they could get messages from different locations.
It says, complete the sign up by clicking here or reply with your full name. So if I reply with my full name, it just said, great, you've been added to the class. So it used that terminology, which is kind of odd. But if I click the button, it asks me, you know, for my age and my name and a few more demographic type things. And it's more like a student kind of interface. So... that can be a little confusing, and you can't really control that at this point.
Right. But the price is right. It's worth exploring if you have a need to do that. Curious if there are volume limitations, anything like that. So be interesting to play with a little bit. So
yep. Good pick. Yep. I was really excited because I think this is a question we've gotten a lot.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
I definitely wanted to try it out.
Curious. Cool. Okay, my pick of the week is, actually it's kind of news as well, but it's related to anybody that uses Chrome. And there was news out earlier last week that Chrome had released a 64-bit build for Windows and for Mac. And 64-bit versus 32-bit computers have a speed at which they can process the little ones and zeros that make up all of what we do, the binary code. And to process 64 bits versus 32 bits would, in some cases, mean it's a lot faster. And in this case, that's pretty true. So when you have a 64-bit browser, you have to be using a 64-bit operating system, and it won't let you install it if you don't. But in my experiments with what Chrome was able to do on my Windows machine, I truly felt that it was more stable and faster. So the article that we'll link to in the show notes talks about the speed up, and they're claiming about a 25% improvement in performance, playing multimedia contents, displaying graphics, etc. It's more secure because you can use a higher level of encryption in 64-bit platforms. And they talk about stability. And I guess I've found that too. They say in particular crash rates for the renderer process, which you know basically is rendering web content, especially imagery, are about half that of 32-bit Chrome. So that's probably enough reason to install the version, the 64-bit version for Windows. The one for Mac is still in beta, although I'm using it for this podcast, and so far so good.
Aren't you
living
brave?
On the edge, yes.
I guess.
Thought I'd try it out. If I'm going to pick it, I'm going to pick it. I would recommend definitely the Windows version, since that's out of beta, is the 64-bit build of Chrome. This is just Chrome. but I would say there's not compelling reasons. There may be some extensions that don't work, but all the major ones do. So, you know, your mileage may vary, just a little bit of a caveat or disclaimer there. But give it a try, the 64-bit version of Windows. I think you can, for Chrome, I think you can use both at the, have both installed. I'm not totally sure about that, but I think that would be the case where you could load one up and do a little of your own comparison. So that is my pick of the week.
All right. Now to give it a try.
Yep.
Very good.
All right, let's move on to a little bit of information about some conferences coming up, one in particular, Sally.
That's right. Wells Tech listeners won't want to miss the Wells Tech Conference 2015. Seems early to be promoting a conference for next summer, Martin. It's July 9th through 11th, 2015, happening at the Country Springs Hotel and Conference Center in Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Waukesha, Wisconsin. Yeah.
And we certainly hope that you have marked your calendar for those dates or you rush right out to do that right now. But we also want to make you aware of some things that are going to be happening there and why you might want to attend or even present at the conference. First up is our pre-conference day. July 9th is actually a day of hands-on workshops. So these are more intense and longer sessions. There'll be some extra fees for them, but I think we're keeping them pretty affordable, Martin, and certainly much more affordable than going to a full-blown class on particular topics or whatever. So come learn about different things in our pre-conference workshops, and then certainly plan to make full use of the 10 breakout sessions where we're going to have speakers on all different topics presenting all kinds of tech and ministry ideas for you. These will be shorter sessions. I think they're scheduled to be about,
yep.
I'm sorry?
50 minutes.
50 minutes, that's right. And I think something for everyone and lots to learn there. And I'm bragging about that because I'm really excited about some of the presentation ideas that have already come in. And I'm looking forward to many of you still submitting presentation ideas because we know you guys that are our Wells Tech listeners have lots of experience to share with others. So give it some thought. There's a page on our conference website called Call for Presenters where you can go over and share your ideas of what you'd like to present at the conference. And if your ideas are selected for breakout presentations, you'll get free admittance to the conference, which is about a $200 value. So just throw it out there, what description you would propose for a breakout session at Wells Tech Conference, and we'll get back in touch with you as we have a chance to evaluate all those submissions.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Let's move on. Community feedback.
Okay, we have a lot to share here. The first up is a follow-up. If you were listening a few weeks ago, you might remember that Julia Wagon Connect kind of challenged us looking for ideas for sharing images online privately. So maybe you have a special school event or special church event, and you'd like to share those images. And Julia came up with using Shutterfly as a way to share privately. And as I dug around the site a little bit, I even found a product they have called Classroom Share, which is specifically for schools to use. You can create a website and share it with your parents and students and easily share privately pictures throughout the school year. So at the beginning of the school year, a great time to set up potentially a classroom share site with Shutterfly. And what's nice about Shutterfly is that they're all about giving you free prints. As you create your account, they'll give you free prints, and they'll give each of your parents some credit to get some prints of some of the photos. You know, obviously they're in the business of selling photos, photo prints in a variety of different formats. They have all kinds of ways that you can get photos printed, but they offer this service for free, so why not take advantage of it for a free site?
Cool. And Shutterfly is a big name that's been around for, a pretty trusted name. It's been around for quite a while in the area of stock photography and photography in general.
Mm-hmm. Several links from our DIGO contributors. First up from Jason Winjet, a link to a church broadcasting on a budget guide. And I think it's very well done, Martin. I don't know if you had a chance to look through this or not, but just this one graphic that they have near the beginning where they show how the wiring works in order to get things into a computer and then to broadcast them out. It's done by a vendor, so it's very centric to their product. But I think they do a good job of explaining what you need to be aware of if you want to do broadcasting of any type from your service.
Yep, and Telestream is that vendor, and they've been around a long time as well. So
excellent. All right. And then Jason also shared a link to this tutorials page for Google Apps and Google Sites Help. And he looked through some of the FAQs here and found them to be very helpful. So if you're looking for some additional help, for Google Sites, Google Apps, you might want to check this out.
Stiegel.com.
Thank you.
Google for teachers. Okay.
Ryan Rosenthal shared a link. This actually probably should go on our wiki page, Martin. It's 31 educational web tools, or maybe you'd call them apps, that every teacher should know about. And it was funny, as I was looking through the list, I got down to the very bottom. Number 31 came full circle to Remind.
Remind is right there.
That's right. Used to be called Remind 101. Now it's just called Remind. But even the text messaging pick was on there.
So. Yeah, I saw a number of things we've talked about on the show. There are a lot of surprises there. So it's actually a pretty good list that you can go by if you are an educator.
Yep. This is a fun one that Jason Schmidt shared. It's called BookTrackClassroom.com, and I have to play with it some. There's a video here that you can watch, but basically you can type in a book that you're going to be reading, and it will supply a background music track that's appropriate for that book, and I believe it syncs it with reading the book on a tablet type device. There's links here to download the app for Google Play and for the iOS device. So I haven't had enough time to play with it, but I really like the concept of, and it talks about how much your comprehension is increased with this background music track playing that goes along with it, you know. So scary music when it's scary or whatever.
It looks like they've pre-done a lot of popular titles there.
Mm-hmm. There are titles listed here and different categories, young readers, science fiction, mystery, adventure, lots of things here. It's classroom-centric, so you're going to see young reader-type titles, it looks like. So I want to play with this more, Jason. Thanks for tagging it. All right. And then this is one that I tagged here, and it's a video, which we have a whole segment for videos now, but it's a video on Vimeo, not on YouTube for some reason, so I thought I'd at least make mention of it. It's done to represent Ecclesiastes 1 and 2, and that things are meaningless, and they kind of superimpose the Bible verses on top of the imagery that they include of someone building a really elaborate sandcastle and the waves washing it away. So if you're looking for some video to kind of introduce a Bible study, perhaps on Ephesians or whatever it may be, you might want to just link to this video from filmmaker Landon Brands. And I found that on the Spark and Echo webpage where they highlight a lot of different artistic things.
Very good. I think I've got the next one, right, Sally? And that was a blog post I ran across from Android Central. My pick a number of weeks ago, or maybe it was even last week, was an app called Push Bullet, which allows your phone and your computer to talk to each other, essentially, sending files back and forth, etc. Now they've added a new feature just after, really, I introduced it, and it says Push Bullet now lets you answer text messages on your computer. So that's a great addition. As you get text messages, you don't have to then go back to your phone to actually interact with the person who's texting you. It will show up on your computer as an SMS message, and from the computer, from the Chrome extension, you can respond to that text message. So it kind of goes along with our Remind conversation, Sally, but here's another example of the ability to text right from your computer. Makes a lot of sense.
Excellent. Good stuff. All right, one more Twitter mention, and that's for our friend, the Quotable Wells teacher, Andy Van Wiel, who's down in the Houston area, I believe, and is running an excellent blog. Recently wrote about one down, who cares how many to go, meaning that he survived his first week of school, and he explains how he is excited to be around the kids again. The kids were happy. They wanted the challenge. They're thriving with structure, and they want to please. So sounds like a very positive start to the school year, and thanks, Andy, for continuing to blog out there. Keep it up.
Yeah, if any teacher wants a good example of maybe how to craft a blog and maybe some topics to think about, his approach, his conversational style, his would be a good one to check out.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, we're back to regular old Wells Tech with a coat of new paint, probably, in some areas. We're going to bring back some features. You may remember that we have had a ministry resource section, which we put on vacation for the summer. That's going to come back. We're going to add News in Tech, which was one that I liked and I think we'll bring back as well. So that is something I'm looking forward to. And we start a conversation about a new book. Those of you that have been with us for a while, for a number of years now, know that each year, we pick a book, or each season we pick a book. And Sally came across this one, I think, by way of, was it Rob Gunther?
And Bob Martens, actually,
Bob
I think
Martins,
was where.
Bob Martens, called What's Best Next? So I've got her analog book. I have my digital book here. How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. Really interested in this read. I haven't really started, Sally, but from the introduction that I've read, and that's what we'll be covering next week, I just actually read the preface. Really interesting combination of biblical stewardship and the concept of productivity.
Yep, productivity is right up your alley, Martin. And I'm surprised we've never done a productivity book before. So I'm excited to explore some of those topics more deeply, but I think from a very gospel-motivated point of view.
It's had good reviews. So if you're interested in following along, grab a copy, either digital or analog. What's Best Next by Matt Perman, P-E-R-M-A-N, before next week's show, and follow along with us. And last but not least, wanted to introduce a survey that Sally and I are doing. We thought that we'd like to encourage more interactivity with the show, get a little more feedback. And this is just for you pastors at this point. We're calling it Pastors Tech, and we've got a little survey that we'd like you to fill out to kind of feed the show. And do we have a URL for that yet, Sally? Or we just send them to the show notes page, or what are we doing here with the survey?
Well, at this point, we'll send them to the show notes page, but I'll set up something fancy for it soon.
Okay. Basically, we're looking for your feedback on some of the technology you use as a pastor, including productivity software, member and prospect management software you use, maybe presentation resources, what you use for Bible study or sermon prep, what mobile apps you use, what gadgets you like. You know, we're looking for a little or a lot of information. It really doesn't matter. We just want some feedback and then share some of that information with the other viewers or listeners, because all of you have, I'm sure, found some things that are invaluable to your ministry that are tech related, and we'd like you to share those. And as a little incentive, we've got a little something special for you. And Sally, what is that little something special? Not for everybody. I should probably not represent that inaccurately, but we'll do a drawing for all the people who have submitted, and they will win. Vanna?
The winner's kind of get a copy of Hymnsoft Player 3.0, a $249 value donated to us for this special giveaway from our friends at Northwestern Publishing House. How awesome is that?
Hymnsoft Player 3.0, it's the latest version, $250 retail value, will be given away to one of the survey respondents. So please join the conversation by submitting your survey. So to go to our show notes page, which is at wellstech.wells.net wellsdotnet. That's also a good way to give feedback to the show in general, or go to our Facebook page, our Google Plus page, our Twitter feed. Good old-fashioned email is fine as well, wellstech@wells.net. Sally, what is our YouTube playlist edition this week?
Well, today it's an artistic edition. There's not even any sound to this video. It's all about the art. And it's only about a minute long, a minute and a half long, but it's done by artist Jason Jasperson. And he actually draws, using sand on a light table, a representation of Jonah and the whale. So you just have to watch it to appreciate his amazing talent, but it's something you'd want to add to your repertoire for when you're presenting Jonah as a Bible story for adults or children. I think everyone would enjoy seeing Jason's talent as he represents it artistically.
Cool. Now that you mentioned Jonah, Sally, we should probably put a little plug in for the next round of the Interactive Faith Bible Study. That's that online Bible study that's produced by our Adult Discipleship Office. They are doing a study on Jonah. Pastor Michael Quant from Utah is leading the study this time, and it starts this Wednesday, which would be Wednesday, September 3rd. If you go to wells.net/live, caught me off guard here. the live stream page, maybe that's the one that I know the best. If you go to new.livestream.com/interactive faith, that's new.livestream.com/interactive faith, you will see all of the offerings there, which start at 6 o'clock Central on Wednesday. There's also an 8 o'clock Central on Wednesday. Tune in and participate in that Bible study on Jonah.
Wow. Bonus Wells Tech content there.
Yep, absolutely.
That was unexpected.
I've totally forgotten about that. It's a great study, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. All online. That's it this week. I hope you join us next week for all the good stuff that is Wells Tech. Remember, better than a Coke Zero. Maybe that's the motto, Sally. Share with your friends. It's Wells Tech. Thanks, Sally, for everything you do, and thanks to all our viewers, our listeners, for joining us once again. Talk to you next week.